There will be no personal nor direct attacks on anyone. And I would ask that you please try to keep down the loud cheering and the clapping. There will be no booing and no unruly behavior. With that,
this is painful, and it will be for a long time.
Donald Trump, baby! That's right, this man knows what's up!
After all, these are a couple of high-stepping turkeys, and you know what to say about a high-stepper. No step too high for a high-stepper.
This is Midday Mobile with Sean Sullivan on FM Talk 106.5.
Well, Sean's a tough guy. I mean, I think everybody knows that. You know, Sean, he took some licks. He hangs in there.
Yeah, what's wrong with the deal we got? I mean, the deal we got drank pretty good, don't it?
Did you hear what I said?
So this is a brave council. I had no doubt about them.
That doesn't suck.
If you don't like it, too bad.
Last question. Were you high on drugs?
Last question. Kiss my...
And Dalton, we may have to pull the isolated cut there of Councilman Richardson talking about the brave council and that he had faith in them. Whatever, you rerun it today as we discuss in the second half of this hour what happened or didn't happen at the Mobile City Council yesterday and play that back and compare and contrast with audio from yesterday. Just an idea. All right, 1208 FM Talk 106.5 and Midday Mobile. Glad to have you here on this Wednesday edition of the show. Live local talk over the next couple of hours. Phone line, text line open for you at 343-0106, and my buddy Peter Albrecht from News 5 in studio. Hey, man.
Hey, Sean. How are you?
I'm good, and we got our work cut out for us tomorrow.
We're trying to figure it all out here, aren't we?
Yeah, so we have been just to pull the curtains back, as we do. So you and I have been working on questions. We've had listener and viewer submitted questions, and we're trying to work out stuff like when do we ask the long questions? When do we ask the short questions? Those kind of things.
All the timing's got to be just right, so we're getting ready for this big debate tomorrow night, and hopefully it'll be informative and entertaining.
It is going to be, it's a chance, and this is, I'll say this, and you can chime in if you want to. It's a chance for people to look beyond what's going to be in the advertising. We have advertising already running in this race on the station. You know, we all will going through to the primary, but it's a chance to maybe get just beyond what you're getting in a 30-second or 60-second spot.
And I'm guessing those 30- and 60-second spots are going to be very similar to mm-hmm. each other, right? I mean, it all kind of comes out of the central casting playbook.
That's right. Because they say this is what works, right?
This is what we're going to, let's see, what will be in this year's. We will have support for President Trump. You
yes.
need a shot of you out either shooting a pistol at
that's
a
right.
range or shoot duck hunting
yes,
or something.
That's right.
You need a shot of you praying at the table with your family.
That's correct.
Maybe coming out of church. What else do you need? Backslapping the worker?
At the big game. Yes.
Yeah.
At a factory or something,
right,
walking
right.
through a factory shot. I don't know if you put the hard hat on or not, but you go, you're in the factory.
Right.
And then, yeah, there's the high school football game, something going on with that.
And your opponent, then you got to put the picture of the opponent in black and white. The opponent is always in black and white.
You're
in black and white, man, you are in trouble.
You're in full Technicolor. They are in some kind of grainy artist sketch of your opponent. And of course, the music in the background, as we've talked about in the past, always, if y'all will listen, and the people that know way more about music than I, it's always minor chords. It's minor chord music in the background. Same stuff you hear around Halloween. It's minor chord music.
Well, it's cheery and bright, right?
Until
except we go to the black and white picture.
And then
we
dun,
have
dun, dun.
Horrible, ominous sounds.
Unless it's a PAC ad that's specifically against one candidate. And then that whole thing is in minor chords as well. But now what we're trying to do, while we're making fun here, but we're trying to get through... I say it goes without saying. We're about to find out tomorrow night that all five of these candidates... I believe on the Republican side would support President Trump. I don't see any question there. But what is the efficacy of that? If you are somebody, you're a Republican voter and you're all on board with President Trump's agenda, okay, people could say they support it, but who's best at implementing it?
Yeah, and what I hope we don't see is, well, I'm more for President Trump than you are. Right.
Right.
I mean,
I think we can assume they are.
You're saying it's a level playing field on the
yes.
Trump issue, and I think
yes.
that's right. So you kind of hope you get a little bit beyond that, maybe some different insight, how they would handle particular issues, maybe germane to our part of the state, and maybe just, you know, a little bit about what they've been doing in their careers, political or otherwise, that, you know, would convince the voter that they're the best person for the job.
Well, that's the thing inside a primary. What I like is in a primary, you can get some of the major things that come up in a general where we're talking about ideology and worldviews that can be very different in a general. They're generally closer to the same inside a primary. So inside that, then I want people to tell me, like, okay, I have all the people come in to get this job. We're widget fitters at mm-hmm. our company. All these people are widget fitters. I just want somebody to say, here's how good I am at fitting widgets. Yeah, you wouldn't believe it. Let me show you, some of the things I've done in the past. I had the best time of widget fitting of anybody out there, or I made a new technology to make widget fitting safer or better. That's kind of what I look for, just as a voter, not even a broadcaster. That's what I look when I'm going to vote.
Yeah, and that's what we're trying to do, figuring out the questions, taking the input from your listeners and our viewers to really try to come up with the questions that'll maybe elicit some of these answers that voters can get a little better idea and differentiate between these five gentlemen.
Yeah, I go back and somebody had said, well, you're putting this attention into the debate here on the primary. And I will point out there are qualified candidates on the Democrat side here, but it has been since Jack Edwards that this has been a seat that Republicans have held.
Yeah, absolutely.
Back when that was not a thing. Back when it was the anomaly, in the state of Alabama to have the Republicans mm-hmm. hold a seat. This was a Republican seat. Back when other parts of Alabama were strongly Democrat for another decade. And here it was. Yeah. So this is, it has been a Republican game.
Yeah, since the mid-60s. And the other thing, Sean, too, is really we don't have these open seat elections very often. This is a seat that if you win and if you so choose, you can hold that position barring some sort of scandal as long as you would like. So when we have these open seat elections come along, which we've only had, this is the third one in the last 30 years, 35 years, it's important to really take a close look at these candidates.
Yeah, we've got some history recently with two of those, but yeah, I'm thinking about generally, with some exceptions, but generally it's been a chief of staff or a high up position for the congressman that ends up getting the step up for the next run.
Yeah, I guess we went, okay, so Edwards into Callahan. We went 65 to 2003, right?
Yep.
With just two.
Yes.
So then, as you said here, in the last 17, 18 years, we've had a little more changeover.
You had Joe Bonner step in.
We had Joe Bonner who stepped down to pursue some other things. And then, of course, Bradley Byrne.
Y'all remember that. Remember last time this was. Remember how big that. It's funny because people are saying there's five people in this Republican primary. I don't have the numbers in front of me. I'll Google to
No, I know where you're going with this.
Last time this was open, the Republican primary, when Joe Bonner stepped down, and this was an open seat, like Peter, I know there were more than five. I'm guessing eight?
Probably. And go back to 2002, and that was a free-for-all. I bet we had 10.
Yes.
And some 10 people, and a lot, almost all of them with, let's say, names, right? With decent name recognition.
Yeah.
Yeah, I'm a little surprised that we didn't have a little more of a feeding frenzy.
Well, that's what I'm saying. When people say, I can't believe there's five. Holy cow, there's five in this primary. But when you do get a seat open like this, there's usually a lot more. We're coming right back. More of our conversation. My buddy Peter Albrecht from News 5 and the co-moderator tomorrow night for the AL1 Republican debate in the studio. We'll be right back.
This is Midday Mobile with Sean Sullivan on FM Talk 106.5.
All right, 1220 FM Talk 106.5 and Midday Mobile. Also, a reminder, yesterday or tomorrow, early in the show, before we get to J.C. Davis Auditorium and the debate in Chickasaw, we've got our grand prize winner for the Go Play Outside sweepstakes. The drawing will happen right here on Midday Mobile in the noon hour. That's coming up tomorrow. And then we'll be talking politics as we get started around 5:30 here on FM Talk 106.5. My buddy Peter Albrecht and I will go live at 6 o'clock with the AL1 congressional debate. Somebody had said, well, how Republican is it to me on the text line, AL1? So, this last was done in 2018, the Cook Partisan Voter Index, R+15 in the district.
And pretty strong.
And think about that. That is R+15, and I would wager to say that may be even higher by... Now, I don't know, 18 might have been a high point. I don't know if you look at it in the... I don't know how many more people would identify in 2020 as a Republican when they feel like they got to go vote in a presidential election, because that's part of this discussion here, versus back then. But yes, it's pretty strong. There's no purple. It's a red district.
Absolutely.
All right. So that's why you and I both also are questioning. You look in the past history, the very few times that this has been a jump ball, at least on the Republican side, there have been quite a few candidates here because this is like the only gateway to get in there for Betty.
Yeah, again, I'm surprised it's as few as five. I thought we would have seven or eight and maybe some more, quote, big name candidates. But it's a different animal, right, from being a representative at a local level or a state level to get into that grind, to going to Washington and that kind of thing. It's got to be something that you really want to do.
Yeah, and it's... although it's one that I would say, looking at the past history, now it doesn't matter. You come in without seniority. You're trying to work with committee assignments and all that. We've had some great appointments currently. Congressman Byrne holds some very important appointments in committees that mean something here. Armed Services, you start looking. I mean, when you go, though, we have a district where you're trying to get on Marine Fisheries Committee, and at the same time, military. At the same time, this other ag thing, it's...
Petroleum.
Yeah, petroleum.
Right, yeah.
I mean, this is... I have argued that AL1 has more in common with districts in Mississippi, Florida, and Louisiana than it does with, like, an AL3.
Oh, no
or
doubt.
Or an AL, you know,
I think that's
AL7.
True, not just the politics, just of life in general. Right. Yeah.
I mean, so you're representing...
culture, everything.
Sure, you're part of the Alabama delegation. You're up there. But the thing, sometimes you probably have to twist some arms of people inside your delegation to get them to pay attention to something that you can get this person from Florida or this person from Mississippi. Go, yeah, I got that issue.
Yeah, I feel, and no offense to redheaded people, but with a redheaded stepchild, I always kind of felt that way, right? If you go up and cover the legislature and some of the other things and just the... the money that Mobile Baldwin brings in versus a lot of times what we get. And then let's not get started on the whole BP oil spill money that all
absolutely
went directly
north
to Montgomery, right?
Yeah. So that's one of the things about AL1. And of course, I might look at it being here that it's bigger than AL2, 3, or whatever. I get it. I mean, those people there probably think it's bigger as well. But for us, it's a big deal. And it's one that, like you said, has a history. If somebody thinks history is going to repeat, they get in at AL1. They may stay there as long as they want to.
Yeah.
You got a situation this time where, last time it was Joe Bonner leaving, not directly to go to some other elected position or run for some office. This one, you had the very early announcement by Bradley Byrne back in February, if I have it right. I think it was. It was in February he announced he's running for Senate. That gave candidates a long time to start getting ready in this.
Yeah, I think you go back to December of 2017, as soon as Doug Jones won, a lot of people were already trying to figure out who's going to run on the Republican side for that spot, and Bradley Byrne's name was there immediately. So people have had a long time to take a look at this, to figure out if this is something they really want to do.
You wonder, too, the other part of this. There's the vote that we, the people, go out and do, but there's the vote beforehand with dollars. And that's something you can watch in that Senate race. But here in the House race, too, you start getting in a district, and you start getting inside a primary with Republicans. They're probably... certain doors have been knocked on by probably all five candidates to get money. You wonder with these primaries, and I can imagine as we had primaries with eight or more people in them, eventually there's just not any donors left.
That's right. And you have competing maybe geographical areas or that kind of thing. And again, you're after the same people for the fixed amount of money. And so, yeah, there's a lot of work before you ever go qualify and turn your paperwork in down at the courthouse or wherever that takes place.
Let's kind of go through the format for tomorrow. So people are just joining us. And if you're just joining us, that voice you know, that's Peter Albrecht. You just don't see him right now. Just hear him. News 5, my buddy and my co-moderator tomorrow night for the debate. So we're inviting you all to get there. I would say if you're going to get there, and I sound like a parent here, but it starts at 6, y'all. I plan to be there by 5:30. Don't come in last minute here. Plan to get there 5:15, 5:30. Have a little bit of time to visit and get your seat. So, because it's 6, It's starting.
It's starting.
Okay.
Right on, right on the money.
Okay. So don't come in. So get there at 6. We will ask questions with just a few little breaks in between from then to 7:30. So we got a lot of questions. Of course, we got a lot of people to answer. We are giving the candidates. We're going to explain this again tomorrow night, but can we explain formatically so people know?
Yeah, basically.
You and I are working off rules here that are already set.
Right. Basically, we have short questions and long questions.
Mm-hmm.
Long questions, the candidates will each get a maximum of 1 minute to answer. The short questions would get 30 seconds for each candidate. We'll cycle the rotation of how they answer it so nobody has any advantage on that.
Mm-hmm.
And we're going to cover a wide array of topics.
All right. So that's so you know that if you go, well, they got more time, nobody's going to get more time than, I mean, we are constrained by the rules of this. How it goes, nobody gets more time, nobody, it is measured. We've got the questions, but they fit in a certain pattern here, y'all. So I'm heading this off at the pass,
right,
Peter.
And you and I have to be kind of rude,
yeah,
really, to keep this thing. I've moderated a number of these things.
Yes,
and
you have.
The candidates all know you have 1 minute to answer, and when they start, you know, if they go a minute and 2 seconds, you know, that's one thing, but once we get going, we're going to have to cut them off.
Yes.
And then people, well, you're so rude, you cut off so-and-so right in the middle of the answer. Well, we got to keep this thing on time.
Well, that's why I have Peter there. I won't say anything.
I get
but
to do
Peter,
it. Okay.
Peter will do it. But you understand it. It's worth saying now. We will say it again, but that's how it works. It's not because we don't like the answer or we could be indifferent to the answer. It's because we have a certain number of questions and a certain amount of time.
Yeah, candidates, be concise and make your points as quickly as you can.
All right. So, when you look at the fact that this is a presidential election cycle, it is interesting how that weighs in if you're running for office for a non-presidential office, right? So, President Trump's on the ballot. What does that mean for different candidates? Now, Alabama's
well, it's a
one
presidential
thing.
Election number one, which means you're going to have more people voting.
Always bigger turnout.
Always.
Bigger turnout.
Right.
Always bigger turnout. Does it? I think that's we joked at first. It's going to be everybody as I no, I'm more like President Trump. I'm more. They're all like President. They all support President Trump. I mean, that's just. But that's probably why, because they want people associating. Let's just talk to the gameplay here. You go to fill out your ballot, and you go right there. The president, you know, and somebody who's a Republican voter. They'll go, all right, on my primary form, I pick. I don't know. I don't even know who is still on the. Who said they're running against President Trump? And that there's
Bill Weld.
Bill Weld's still
others,
on,
right?
And there's some also Rands out there. So you'll see those, and the people select Trump and whatever name, if they haven't studied this up, that they have associated President Trump. But they look down on this sheet here in the primary. That's a lot of people like, oh yeah, Trump, and then that person for AL1.
Yeah, well, it's going to be interesting because you've got a Senate race. That on Republican side, we're talking the Republican primary here. You've
but
got
wait,
a
eight
very
in
interesting
that, eight in that.
Yeah, and a very interesting Senate race, an open seat, and at least for the Republicans approaching mm-hmm. this, and then this congressional seat. So that's and it'll be on us quickly. This is March 3rd,
yes.
And then we'll have this long period to the general election, and that's another topic that you could talk about. In the past, we've had it in June and that kind of thing. But that'll be very interesting, and I think it'll be interesting for some independents, and I know there aren't as many of those left as we used
right.
to have, but independents in March making that decision, do I want to vote in the Republican primary?
Mm-hmm.
We've got this close Senate race and this congressional race. Or, and we don't know what's going to happen in Iowa and some of these early places, do I want to go over here and vote in this Democratic presidential election
right.
that might at that point have 7 or 8 still viable candidates in it? And then, of course, if you go vote for the Democratic primary to vote in the presidential, and you're going to have runoffs for Congress and Senate on the Republican side, well, then you're out
that's right.
for the runoff. So that'll be a lot of interesting decisions and stories coming up in March.
I will give my opinion on what I see as being the chances for a runoff in AL1. I'll wait till after tomorrow night. I'll tell you for the Senate race, how we could not have a runoff would be the statistical challenge to show me how we don't have a runoff.
Yeah, I agree with you. And when you look at that race, you have 5 people with significant name recognition.
Yes.
3 people less so, but maybe some geographical advantages. I'm with you. I don't know how in the world anybody gets more than even 30% of those eight candidates.
So it's going to a runoff. Yeah. So, yes, that's one thing, too. If you want to get cutesy or whatever, you don't get to take part in the runoff. So,
And you've got to decide how you're going to spend your money.
Yes.
I mean, are you going all in to try to get in that runoff, or are you, you know, holding back thinking, okay, I'm going to get in the runoff, I'm going to need some money, for that six-week stretch?
That is always the question, right? I have told politicians in the past, I said, if you don't make the runoff, you'll never have a chance to spend it, will you?
That's true.
All right. That is my co-moderator tomorrow night and my buddy Peter Albrecht from News 5. We'll be watching you tonight and talking to you tomorrow.
Sounds good, Sean.
This is Midday Mobile with Sean Sullivan on FM Talk 106.5.
All right, welcome back. FM Talk 106.5 and Midday Mobile on this Wednesday. Glad to have you along. Monitoring what's happening in Washington. We're going to talk about what happened yesterday in Mobile in just a second. And while we're talking about what's happening in Mobile, y'all say hello to my buddy Angelo at Mobile Bay Coins and Fine Jewelry. Hey, Angelo.
Hey, how's it going today?
It's good. And you were talking about spot. Okay, I want you to lay this out, and then I'm going to back you up and get you to explain something. So you said right now for silver, you're doing what?
We have some silver as low as 79 cents over spot.
Okay. Somebody's riding down the road who, like me, before you and I gave me an education. What's spot? What is spot what? What does that mean?
So spot is the market price. You know, you always hear about stock markets going up and down, the precious metals markets going up and down. So that's all based off of the spot price. That's the on-the-spot pricing for what the big boys are buying and selling thousands of ounces for. So when you get down to our level, most of us aren't buying thousands of ounces. So you're going to pay a little more, a little over spot to get that gold or silver. And you're looking at two things. Where's the spot price? So where's the market condition right now? And how much over that spot price do I have to pay to get the silver or the gold that I want? And 79 cents over spot, great, great value.
All right. So you get in at that. And give us a general, or what's going on right now or the last couple days trend in precious metals. What's happening?
It's sort of been hovering. I know we talked a while back about how gold was and silver were relatively low. They shot up, and now they've sort of stabilized. Gold is hovering just under $1,500 an ounce, and silver is hovering somewhere around $17. So they've stabilized for the moment. It's going to be interesting to see what happens over the next few months.
All right. I know this is unlike you and I, but there are some people that are already thinking about getting their Christmas shopping done. I know.
What?
I know. give them something to come look at the store.
Yeah, check out the new Opinel knives. We've got some new Opinel knives in stock. Don't even have them on display yet, so you will have to ask for them. These are the ones with the olive wood handles.
Very good. Tell folks how to find you.
We're in Midtown, 2204 Government Street. You can always check us out online at mobilebaycoins.com or go onto Facebook and check out our pictures there.
Thanks, Angelo.
Have a good one, Sean.
You too. Angelo, check it in from Mobile Bay Coins and Fine Jewelry. And 12:38, we'll grab some calls too. 343-0106, 343-0106 on the text line as well. Anderson asking if I'll have a gavel like Adam Schiff. But hey, Anderson, they actually gave me a gavel years ago here, my coworkers at FM Talk 106.5. It is in a desk drawer back in the office that I rarely go to in the back of the broadcast building here, but it's back there. Maybe I could take that out. But Anderson, the reason I brought that up, and it's so great to have a conduit like this show, this radio station, to just tell folks stuff. Often, if you didn't know the what goes in on behind the scenes for a debate, if the person you like, the candidate you like, for whatever it is, you might be watching something, you may be there in person down the road, and the moderator says, you know, your time is up, we got to go to the next candidate, you may feel like, oh, they're just doing that because they didn't want to hear what my person said or the person I like. It's at this point, it's completely agnostic. It is done by time and countdown. And so when we say, hey, your time's up, it's not because we're trying to like keep somebody from saying something. It's just that's what we have to do to make this thing move on. So that's so I don't think I'll gavel. I think maybe a big gong. A gong would be nice. All right, speaking of places I would have hit a gong, bang a gong, get it on, would have been during the Mobile City Council meeting yesterday. And I want to go now, there are a lot of parts of this to go through. First of all, if you missed it, the Mobile City Council voted. It's hard to say because it's they did not vote to give the vote to the people who had petitioned to come into the city, the 13,000 people in those three West Mobile neighborhoods, right? They did not do that. But they did. A majority of the city council, four members of the city council, voted to allow the vote to go on. Three members of the council voted no. But because in certain votes in the Mobile City Council and the Zogby Act and the system of government we have, you have to have a supermajority. We often talk about the supermajority when it's budget, right? That's when the supermajority comes up the most. It's not always supermajority at the council, but there's certain things that are supermajority, and having this vote was one of them. So, you know, I see headlines, and I guess they're accurate because the Mobile City Council as a body did not approve the vote, but they'll say Mobile City Council votes against, you know, annexation or something. Well, actually, more members of the council voted for those neighborhoods having the vote than voted against it. So I just want to make sure that's clear. They don't get the vote because you have to have a supermajority, but more members of the council said yes to allowing the people to write a referendum in those three neighborhoods than said no. I read through a little bit of my buddy Dale Leisha's story over at LaniatMobile.com. Says the Mobile City Council voted against allowing 13,000 residents of West Mobile a referendum on whether to join the city following an expedited hearing on Tuesday, November 19th. The vote fell along racial lines, with the four white councilors voting in favor and the three black councilors voting against the proposal that would allow 13,000 residents of West Mobile to decide on annexation. Despite a simple majority of councilors allowing the vote, the item failed due to a lack of a supermajority of five votes, which is required by the state law that sets up Mobile's form of government. Okay. Then he goes on to talk about what happened before the vote went down. You had two former mayors of the city of Mobile petitioning on two sides of this. You had former Mayor Mike Dow speaking for annexation. You had former Mayor Sam Jones, now Representative Sam Jones, speaking against annexation, which I think raised a lot of eyebrows, because if you remember some of the bigger stories while Sam Jones was mayor of the city of Mobile, it's annexation. Annexation stories were a big deal then, and he was for annexation. He yesterday starts talking about the numbers and then gets into the question about race. And he himself said yesterday that it's a people vote based on race. Let me run the audio. This is audio from my friend Cassie Fambro. This is from NBC 15. This runs on their website, but it's got a little bit of the audio we're talking about. Where is it? There it is. All right, let's go to this, and I let you hear this in their own words, Sam Jones and Mike Dow.
There's nothing wrong with discussing polarization, racial polarization in voting, because it happens every day.
State Representative Sam Jones said the elephant in the room was race. Ultimately, the vote fell on racial lines, with Councilman LaVon Manzi, C.J. Small, and Fred Richardson voting it down. Small said the citizens of his district, which Dauphin Island Parkway is in the heart of, must come first.
People say it's a black and white thing. It's not a black and white thing, in my opinion. In my opinion, it's a rich, middle class, and poor.
Small said existing needs, such as infrastructure and low-cost housing, need attention before expanding the city.
Look what's in our community. Come off the hill and come down to the valley to see what's going on.
Councilman Daves felt the decision should be in the people's hands.
Let us today grasp this opportunity. I will vote in favor of giving the people the right to vote.
It all came down to Council President Manzi, the swing vote.
I'm going to lean on the directives that I've received from the citizens who sent me here to Government Plaza. They are not convinced.
The room hushed as the vote was taken.
All in favor?
Aye.
Aye.
All opposed?
Opposed.
The items failed.
It failed 4-3, needing five votes to pass.
To think that we can not embrace the idea of annexation in the future is ludicrous.
Stimson said he will keep looking to expand west, since Mobile is otherwise boxed in.
We've got 2 years left. We're going to have the gas pedal to the floor. We've got a lot to do.
All right. So you heard a little bit of the audio. We're going to come back. In Dale's story, Dale Leisha's story at Lanyap, He says this, in voting no, Councilman Fred Richardson conflated the cost for services inside the entire 70,000 population police jurisdiction with the cost associated with a small percentage of the population. Did that stop anybody from voting no yesterday? Nah, it didn't. Come right back.
This is Midday Mobile with Sean Sullivan on FM Talk 106.5.
We're discussing polarization, racial polarization in voting, because it happens every day.
Every day, says the former mayor and the state representative, Sam Jones. Yesterday, when he was there to tell you why annexation was bad after he had led multiple annexation moves while he was mayor. So just want to check. So he was pro-annexation before he was anti-annexation. And I think in what Richardson was, Sam Jones was saying right there, he was leaning on the fact that it's because of racial polarization that it's okay to vote no on annexation, I think. Councilman Richardson, this is quote here from Dale Leash at Lanyap, says, in voting no, Councilman Fred Richardson conflated the cost for services inside the entire 70,000 population police jurisdiction with the cost associated with a small percentage of that population. I'm glad that Dale wrote this because I heard that going down yesterday. I'm like, that's not right. Because of this conflation, Richardson argued the city couldn't afford the additional population. The total net revenue increased by taking in the proposed areas would have been $2.2 million. After the fifth year, according to estimates from the mayor's office. Now, those are the estimates I've been working off of. That's what and we have people say, well, those aren't right. Okay, fair enough. If they're not right, show us why they're not right. This is what I was saying for the weeks leading up to yesterday's vote. Show me. Now, I think it is a fair argument made by people that were anti-annexation to say, you know, we might get the additional federal grants. We might get those things. That's fair. That's fair because it's not a sure thing. I mean, people can say, you can look at the track record of the grant writers for the city of Mobile has been very good. Very good. And we'd move into a new class and here's what would be available. And one could assume we might get these very big grants coming to the city at a level we hadn't gotten before. But you can't prove that on paper. What you could prove on paper is a net increase of revenue to the city of Mobile by $2.2 million. But the arguments were made yesterday by the three members of the council that voted no. They were talking about not having money to fix things that are already in their districts and issues. The city wasn't proposing to spend money to bring in these 13,000. The city was going to, until you show me documents that show me that this number is wrong, the city was going to be a net beneficiary by $2.2 million. So what am I to think about an argument that says that they're going to vote no because, issues in their districts? There's issues in the districts for sure. And we talked to folks that this, that, and the other, and big things and small things are not getting done in their district. I get that. But this was a net gain to the city. So your argument about money, it's just not an argument. You get more money for the city of Mobile. And also, if you're trying to protect your job as the council member from your district, there's nothing that was changing the districts. If you want to stay with what Sam Jones was saying and be obsessed with the race portion of this, which I pray we can get over this. You know, this is why I pushed for 10 years my burqa idea, where everybody who runs for office is in a burqa. Every plan is, you don't know the sex of the person, you don't know the race, don't know anything, you deal on ideas, and then once you vote, then you go, oh, it's a white dude or a black woman or something, you know, because, I mean, it's just that insignificant to me, and I think it's such a old way of thinking that is slowing down our city. But Sam Jones said that racial polarization is going on every day in voting, so... Which one is it? Is it because you really are worried, members of the council, about the money not coming to your district, even though we've been shown it's a $2.2 million increase to the city of Mobile? Or is it the fact that you don't like the number of white people coming into the city? Which, by the way, this doesn't say it's 13,000 white people. It was like 8,000 white people, 3,000 black folks, and some number of, I'm sorry, to all the other groups, but all the other groups are lumped into one. Somebody said this on the text line yesterday. I think this was astute as well. The annexation was actually not for people. The annexation is for property, right? Geography, neighborhoods, corridors. Without any change or hold on who populates those corridors going down the road. So the idea that it's all about what the skin color of somebody in that house is what, if you're going to obsess on that, that's what's true today. What's true tomorrow? What would be true tomorrow is the city of Mobile would be bigger. The city of Mobile would be $2.2 million to the good. And maybe get these extra grants, and you know, the trimmings would be extra grant dollars. It could be used in all districts of the city. You would also have a situation where you'd have, for those of us that care about it, we'd be the second biggest in the state. I mean, that doesn't get you anything but bragging rights, but hey, it's a thing. But I mean, even during yesterday's meeting, the long-term Mobile City Councilman, Fred Richardson, was using the cost of services to the entire 70,000 in the PJ to represent the cost of services to the 13,000. It is just not right. And if a member of the city council can't get that right, I mean, that's their job to know that. And like was pointed out by David this morning, he called about, yeah, there was that moment there where Councilman C.J. Small said if he would get a check for $20 million written out to District 3 to address the infrastructure issues, then he would vote yes. Now, that is how politics are done. It's done day in and day out. But that was pretty out front there, saying that's the cost. So there you go. District 3, folks, that the $20 million would change everything for Councilman Small. I mean, we look at an issue here. What happens going forward? What happens if we have that bill pass this year in session that would remove the requirements entirely for PJ? You look at Mobile is one of the few bigger cities in the state that still has a police jurisdiction. What if we pull back to city lines with the city of Mobile? The city limits, pull back. What happens? Those people outside are going to have to organize somehow for public safety. Fire and police, EMS. What do? They incorporate into a 70,000 person new city of West Mobile, and then Mobile itself can never grow beyond that. I think yesterday was very short-sighted on not allowing people to vote on whether to come in or not, something that has not happened in the past annexations, the ones that came up during former Mayor Sam Jones' terms. The members of the council all voted to let people have the vote. Want to point this out beyond record at this point. That was inaccuracies and political poppycock that ran yesterday's city council meeting. All right, coming back, hour number two, we continue to get to know the candidates. Mobile County Commissioner Jerry Carl is our guest, and he is in next.